This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Welcome in. As you listen to this, the Cardinals are now several games into their season. And opening day was Thursday. And, you know, here we are with a recorded broadcast. So I don't know what the outcome of that was. But, hey, it's baseball season, Bo Matthews, and we're all in a good mood.
Are they still serving beer at Busch Stadium, or did they lose the opener? Worst joke in the world. Can I point something out real quick, Mark?
Please.
Air piano, or air organ, as you were playing on this program, is not as cool as the guitar.
It's not, and here's the problem. All day Thursday on my show, Carl Middleman played different organist versions of Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Pew pew.
That's probably why I'm so used to hearing it. I'm acting like I can actually play it on a piano.
You can look suave keyboard. Doing that, though.
Yes, I guess you can.
You can look suave. Not cool, but suave.
That's so funny.
Not cool. That's true. So,
but it was your anniversary on opening day.
Yes, thank you. Very well. 32 years.
Congratulations.
She has put up with me. Thank you for pointing that out.
Congratulations to Michelle.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
No kidding. Yeah, 32 years. Time flies, man, when you're having fun. See what I'm saying?
Okay, so I'm going to start now.
Go ahead.
We're 25 years together. We're on our way.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, that's great.
I'm 27.
And you have some uber impressive children. And I'm going to relive this moment when you played the national anthem. I think it was Monday morning. I was in the thought tub. 104-degree water temperature, and you started your daughter's performance of the national anthem. I had chills over my whole body, and it was the weirdest thing. But I was so impressed, dude. I've shared the video a few times with some folks.
Thank you for saying that. We went and did the Brian Kilmeade event in St. Louis last weekend on Saturday night. Brian was in town, and he filled up the factory. So capacity out there is 1,700. It was a sellout by Showtime at 8 o'clock Saturday night. And earlier that day, it's really weird, earlier that day, a group of us from the radio station had a chance to have lunch with Brian when he first got into town. And I was having lunch with his producer, Allison, was there. And she's like, I'd ask her about her children. She asked about mine. And I mentioned that we'd just gotten back from Alabama to a college visit for our youngest. And she says, what does she want to study? And I said, music and maybe journalism. She's not quite sure. She goes, oh, she's a singer. And I said, she is. And, you know, I mean, I think a lot of parents probably would tell you their child could sing. The question is, could they actually pull it off on a microphone? So she said, would she be willing to sing the national anthem tonight? And I'm like, I think so. Let me call her, right? I texted her, and of course, she was all in immediately. I'm like, I have an idea. How about letting her come to the sound check, and then you can determine if you want her to sing the national anthem? And they were all blown away, so it was not a problem.
And then it was on Fox Nation.
I was curious about that. So she did have a chance to do a sound check for that room.
She did do a sound check in the room, and she was so excited because Olivia Rodriguez had played that.
Rodrigo
had played that. I don't even know who she is. Had played that the factory on that stage a couple years ago, Carl?
Yeah, that was one of the first shows.
I don't even know how she knew that, but she was so impressed that she was on the same stage where Olivia Rodrigo,
had played. Sure. And I was impressed because it was the same stage where Wolfgang Mammoth Van Halen had played about a year and a half ago, and I got to go see him down there. So that was nice.
Wow. That's very cool. And you said it was broadcast on Fox Nation.
Yes. Correct.
Her performance. So when you said on the air Monday morning that that was her, the biggest audience she ever performed for, your daughter, Ginger, did you mean the room size or the broadcast?
The room size. I don't know what sort of subscription base they have on Fox Nation, but it is their app that you have to pay $6 or $7 a month for. There's really a lot of great programming on there. Sure. But they did carry the Brian Kilmeade event live, and now it's, I believe, available on demand on Fox Nation for people that want to watch it. So
it was a heck of a moment.
Yeah, thank
you. For anybody that's a fan of yours. You are doing it right. You're a good patriot, and you're raising great kids, man.
You are too kind, Bo Matthews. I appreciate that, my
true
friend.
Story.
Thank you very much. Wasn't much of a week news-wise, though, was it? I mean, like, did you pick up any signals this week?
Well, I sent you a text through Signal.
How did I miss that? You must have sent it to the wrong person.
No, it came to me.
Oh, yeah,
probably. The funny thing about that app, I learned about it a year and a half ago or so. My dad's neighbor actually sent me, an invite. And so I signed up on, I wish it was just second nature to go to that and do all my texting through it, but I don't. I use the thing on the phone.
What's the advantage of it?
And the advantage that it's encrypted, right?
Okay.
That nobody can break in.
Unless you're accidentally added.
Which is hogwash. Now, see, this is the big thing about this story. This is Pete Hegseth, of course, the Secretary of Defense, was pretty fed up by the middle of the week after every day the Democrats were demanding he resign and demanding this and claiming it was war plans. And Tammy Duckworth, the senator from Illinois, called him, she dropped the F-bomb, called him a effing liar. And finally, here's what Hegseth said late in the week.
As I said to this group a couple of times on this trip now, as we move to the Indo-Pacific to do our job, which is what we're here to do, nobody's texting war plans. Well, I noticed this morning out came something that doesn't look like war plans. And as a matter of fact, they even changed the title to attack plans because they know it's not war plans. There's no units, no locations, no routes, no flight paths, no sources, no methods, no classified information.
Yeah, true. And the other thing about this that I found out this week that I didn't know, Bo, is that the federal government does not have its own, like, internal proprietary text technology. So they've had to go out and buy it on the commercial market, and Signal is the one they've used for a number of years. It's not like they were using Confide or whatever Eric Greitens people were using that time, where you get the message, once you read it, it just like disappears, poof. That's not what this is at all.
And why isn't that? Why, now we have Elon Musk close to the White House. I mean, this is a guy that could take care of something like that.
I imagine by the end of the week.
The other question would be, how do they send their war plans to other people? Is it email? Is
well,
it,
I don't know,
what
know that they. I don't know that they do. I mean, I think generally speaking, and I could be wrong, those things are done at a higher security level, maybe at a SCIF, as they call it, where, you know, it's a completely secure room, or they would meet in person at the Pentagon or somewhere,
sure,
to discuss exactly what the details were. I don't think anybody is emailing or texting about the actual war plan.
Well, we've all texted something to the wrong person before, right? I mean, there's a lot of risque pictures that have been sent to other people.
I don't know about you, Bo. What have you been sending?
Well, no. I've read about it. That's what I'm saying.
On
an iPhone, you can actually go and click and hit more, and then you can delete the message, I think, before somebody else sees it,
yes,
if you're that quick.
It's like there's a time.
You can do it. You have a period of time when you can do it. This is funny because at the event the other night with Brian Kilmeade, I snapped a picture of my daughter and Brian Kilmeade back in the green room behind the stage, and Allison, Brian's producer, said, send me a copy of that. So I immediately didn't have my glasses on. I immediately pulled up the picture, hit the text thing, typed in Allison, and it auto-completed, and I hit send, and I sent it to Allison Onder, who's the wife of Congressman Bob Onder.
Oh, no.
It's spelled differently than Brian's producer. Her name is spelled with a Y, and I mean, right. That's why you should never text without your glasses on. The issue here, correct me if I'm wrong, is that none of these people claim that they even had this guy's phone number. So either one of them is lying, which I don't think, or just like that Alexander Vindman, the whistleblower who hated Donald Trump, who came out and created all the stir that led to one of his impeachments for the way he handled the phone call with the Ukrainian leader, somebody at the NSA was listening, and they added the number in because they wanted the information to be shared. They wanted to create a stir. I'm not saying I know that's what happened. I'm speculating that it's possible somebody else added this individual to that text stream.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a wonderful technology. And by the way, texting, during the beeper era, texting was used for years for people that were deaf, that couldn't hear. They had these little gadgets, looked like a pager, and I forget what they call it, but it's been around forever.
Yes.
And there is going to be a snafu like this, but just to clarify, there was no war plans that were text through Signal.
Here's the thing, and I played this bite again the other day. I play it all the time. When Trey Gowdy was questioning James Comey after the Hillary Clinton investigation, did Mrs. Clinton said she never sent anything, that was
top secret
over her email. Yes, Mrs. Clinton did. We found thousands of emails that went out over the years from various different laptops to different people, like on open networks. What the scope of what she did pales so much in comparison to anything that happened here that I don't even want to hear them talk to me about it, because we've now learned this week from Lisa Page, Peter Strzok's lover at the FBI back during Operation Crossfire Hurricane, that it was the DOJ that told Comey, you will not look for charges in this. You will not seek charges in this. The DOJ decided Hillary Clinton would not be charged.
All right, quit talking about that.
I'm sorry. I'm worked up.
Judiciary Committee sends national reciprocity bill for concealed carry to the House for the vote. We're going to talk about that with Luis Valdez and more coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. It's Second Amendment Radio at the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews with Mark Cox. And on this show, we talk about guns, gun laws, and that kind of good stuff. Well, this week, a pretty important conversation with Luis Valdez from 2A Tuesday happened on the Mark Cox Morning Show. And they talk about national reciprocity for gun owners across this country and some other things. Let's check that out.
If you ban them in the future, the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size? If you do, you could cook it at the same time.
Put that double barrel shotgun and fire two blasts outside the house.
That is without a doubt the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
All right, we welcome in Luis Valdez again from gunowners.org, Gun Owners of America. He happens to be the Florida State Director for them. Luis, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
It's always a pleasure to be on the air with you fine folks.
It's great to have you on. Obviously, we've got a much different administration now. That doesn't mean we don't still need to be vigilant on what's going on with our Second Amendment rights. And I see where GOA has posted a story, Eric Pratt, in fact, on the most important actions the White House can take now that they have resumed power. What are those? Hit those for us.
Well, the biggest thing that we're pushing, of course, is national reciprocity. We want the White House to really give its full support for H.R. 38 in Congress, which removes the undue burden of Americans traveling across the country and being made defenseless because of imaginary lines. But other things that the White House could do directly is like the executive order that Trump passed that directed Pam Bondi, the Attorney General, to basically do a report on things that are an affront to the Second Amendment. Another thing that he did that was fantastic was the appointment of Kash Patel as director of the FBI and him as the acting director of ATF, because one of the first things he's doing is he's moving 1,000 agents from ATF to the FBI. That means ATF is getting a 40% manpower cut. That's a 40% cut and people who abuse our FFLs and people who go after our manufacturers, who go after our law-abiding gun owners because of frivolous things like forgetting to dot an I or cross a T on a form 4473. But the other things that, of course, we're pushing through is the abolishment of ATF's illegal gun registry, which ATF has admitted before Congress that they are in violation of federal law, repealing the Biden-era frame and receiver rule that restricts every American's right to make a homemade firearm, which, you know, they call them ghost guns, but last I checked, we call them freedom sticks because, let me see here. Yeah, wasn't it didn't the revolutionaries build their own muskets to fight the crown back in 1775, 1776?
You know, that didn't turn out the way some governments would like it to.
Exactly.
They don't want you to have that ability.
Last I checked, there was a historical record of, not going very well of banning homemade firearms. But the other thing, of course, is pressing federal law enforcement as a whole, FBI, ATF, DEA, you know, DOJ, all of them as a whole for holding them accountable for exceeding the law and violating our Second Amendment rights as Americans.
Yes. You know, you see it all too often, and I'm glad that you guys are out there working hard for that because, you know, back to the ghost gun thing for a minute. I hear the statistics. Well, it doubled. The number of ghost guns found in America doubled last year from, you know, I don't know if it was 20 and they found 40 or whatever the number was. It's such a tiny percentage, and the mainstream media will take a number like that and they'll blast it out as a huge increase and a big problem, when everybody with any common sense knows that it's not.
It's not an issue. It's not a problem. Look, you have hundreds of thousands. Let me rephrase it. You have hundreds of millions of law-abiding gun owners here in this country that have owned firearms for generations now. The amount of firearms in legal circulation is an astounding number. And it's a minuscule number of those that are being used in the commission of crimes. And that's just regular, everyday manufactured firearms, you know, from companies like Colt and Smith & Wesson, Ruger, Beretta, HK, so on and so forth. The fact that Americans now have the ability to commonly make a firearm in their home is not something to be trifled with. It's not something to be shocked about. It's something to be celebrated. We're going back to our historical roots. Look, what made this country great was the ability for Americans to make their own firearms. It's a time-honored tradition that goes back before the country was even founded. And I know a number of people who make their own firearms. They make their own frames, their own receivers, they experiment, they tinker. And that's what is great about the American experience as a whole. You know, it's this land of freedom where people could come here and try things, and if they fail, they could try again. Because guess what? Tomorrow's next great product that could be on the hips of our cops, of our soldiers, of our law-abiding public, it's probably being tinkered with some guy or gal today in their home with a 3D printer. And I celebrate that.
You were just posting on X about 20 minutes ago or so about a bill that's making its way through, I believe, the Florida legislature. And I've heard of something similar going on in different states. I'm assuming this is about the purchase ban, right, for anyone who's under 21. Is that what's going on there in Florida?
Yes. Yes. Florida is the only Republican state in the country with an under 21 purchase ban, along with an open carry ban. Now, the governor fully supports the repeal of these bans. Our attorney general does, even our commissioner of agriculture, the guy who authored the Parkland gun control bill back in 2018. He's admitted, yeah, we did some screw-ups. Now, the problem that we're having is we have a Republican supermajority in the legislature, and you have a lot of Republicans who basically, they campaign as Republicans with an R by their name, but they're former Democrats. And one of them is a representative by the name of Hillary Castle. She literally left the Democratic Party this past November. The Republican Party of Florida welcomed her with open arms. Its party chairman, Evan Power, said, oh, she'll do great. I've known her for years. She's a great addition. Florida's going to win. Guess what? She voted against House Bill 759, the bill that would repeal the under 21 purchase ban. And I warned the Republican Party, saying if you welcome her, she's going to turn on gun owners, she's going to turn on the GOP, and she sure enough did. And even the governor has made a similar warning. He said, look, I'm paraphrasing a statement, but just because they have an R by their name doesn't mean anything. They campaign on being pro-gun, they campaign on being pro-liberty, but once they're in office, they do the opposite.
We have some of those in Missouri, too. For sure.
Oh, I know. Trust me, I remember the last time I was on your show, we discussed what was going on.
Yes.
And my counterparts in Wyoming, they're just dealing with their governor, who vetoed a pro-gun bill. You know, they were passing legislation to repeal gun-free zones, and their Republican governor vetoed it. Now, luckily, it's in Wyoming, it's the governor, not the legislature, who's anti-gun as a Republican. So the legislature was able to override the veto. In Florida, it's the opposite. You have a Republican supermajority where the leadership is anti-gun, but you have a Republican executive branch that's saying, why are we the worst Republican state in the country? This is horrible.
Well, you correct me if I'm wrong. Speaking of Luis Valdez from Gun Owners, but... This all passed in a knee-jerk reaction to Parkland, the shooting there. And wasn't Pam Bondi attorney general when that happened?
Pam Bondi was the attorney general. She has proudly proclaimed that she had a hand in drafting that legislation. And I can tell you this, I was the only cop in the state of Florida to publicly speak against that bill when it was up for public commentary in the committees when it was being rushed. Hmm. Now, here's the real appalling thing. They introduced that bill halfway through session, and it went from introduction to Rick Scott's desk in 16 days.
Wow.
But it takes Florida weeks to years to pass little tiny pro-gun bills. Yeah. This is just appalling, and this shows you that Republican lawmakers will turn on you if it means that they'll stay in office.
Sounds like Gun Owners has the right guy in charge down there. Lewis, we appreciate your time as always, my friend. Thank you.
Always. Thanks for being a shining beacon of liberty on the airwaves.
Yes, sir. We will talk soon. That is Luis Valdez there with the Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. You can go online there and read updates. You can also sign up for their alerts, and you don't have to pay anything to do that. You just basically subscribe to it, and they'll send you email alerts and let you know what's going on in your state. Which is really handy if you want to keep an ear on what's going on around the country.
This segment has been brought to you by Razorback Armory. They are a gun concierge on Manchester in De Pere. If you've never been, you got to go. Check them out online at RazorbackArmory.com. Tell them Bo sent you. Coming up on the show, we are going to talk to Airman First Class William Heimberger. He has a very unique collection as he is active military with the United States Air Force. That conversation happens next on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. It is Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews, alongside my buddy Mark Cox. And we, on this show, talk about Second Amendment, the laws. We talk about guns. We talk about new technologies and suppressors and all kinds of great stuff. We talk about the great outdoors as well. And sometimes we feature military things. And I have an affinity for this subject because I'm an Air Force brat. I was born in Japan. And so my father, long legacy in the military, 47 years, actually, 24 in uniform, 23 in civil service with the Air Force.
Wow.
Retired as a GS-14, which is equivalent to a colonel. And we've got the beginning class, if you will, Airman First Class, William Heimberger. And he's known for more than just a guy in a uniform. He is known for his dorm. What? Airman First Class, I'm saluting you right now. Heimberger, welcome to the show, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on air.
I honestly don't even know how we found you, but Carl Middleman, our producer, is good like that. Tell me what you are known for, sir, in your military career.
Absolutely. So as of recently, the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base has taken an interest in my what they call dorm museum. I've always been pretty fond of collecting military items since a young age. And after I enlisted in the Air Force, I specifically began collecting Air Force-related items from the onset of the Army Air Corps to mostly present-day items as well. So the dorm has turned in from a living space to a living space slash museum. So it caught the eye of quite a few airmen and in my flight as well, and it kind of spiraled into this amazing article that was published, and it just kind of continues going from there.
Well, congratulations. We should point out to people that in addition to serving and living there in Dayton, Ohio, at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, you grew up here, though. Tell us about your history in St. Louis.
Absolutely. So I am St. Louis, as true as they come. I went to grade school at St. Gabriel the Archangel, and then I went to high school at Bishop DeBerg, just down the street for those familiar with it. And after high school, I went to St. Louis Community College, got an Associate's in General Studies, and then continued my studies at UMSL. And then after college, I actually embarked with the St. Louis County Police Department, went through the St. Louis Municipal Police Academy, graduated, and then I did about a year with St. Louis County. And then through my time there, I realized it wasn't quite what I wanted to make a career out of. So I decided to kind of switch trajectories slightly to a different uniform role and instead looked into the military and found my way to the Air Force.
And how old are you right now?
I am 25 currently.
Well, what is your job in the Air Force, sir?
So currently I am a 1-2 Alpha. For those not familiar with the AFC codes, that is a signals intelligence analyst.
Okay. All right.
Oh, isn't that ironic? With the news headlines about signal, my goodness.
Not that kind of signal, Carl. I mean, Bo, not that kind of signal, right?
Negative.
I thought so. So, Airman, tell us back to the collecting. I mean, I don't know about Bo Matthews here, but I love to collect things. Here I am in the radio business. I was in the TV business for a long time, and many years ago, I started collecting antique radios because it was something I was passionate about broadcasting, and it kind of dated back to the very beginnings of over-the-air broadcasting, of course, was radio, and that's what attracted me to it. Tell me a little bit about how you got started with your collection and how in the world you store it all in one dorm room.
Absolutely. So it actually starts a while back. My initial interest in collecting military history started in about the second grade after I watched the movie Saving Private Ryan, believe it or not, at the ripe age of 7. But that kind of caught my interest, and from there I started, at that age doing what studying I could, and eventually started going to antique shops, military shops, surplus stores, and kind of, starting to buy items and piece them together and learning the history through that. And over the years, I obviously, as I had more funds, I started buying more and more, intricate items or harder to, find items, and also got into, World War II reenacting at a younger age, and did that through high school. And the collecting just continued and continued. And then once I got into the military, as I said before, I kind of refocused my interest from specifically just World War II to Air Force history as a whole. And to your point of how do I fit this in my dorm, it is not an easy task. I will say I have used every square inch of my room to my best of my ability as far as using the walls to, display different framed items and then, hanging things from the ceiling, and then as well as a variety of different mannequins sporting the different uniforms worn throughout the history. So it's an endeavor, but it's certainly kind of a fun project to work on in the side.
We are talking with Airman First Class William Heimberger from St. Louis, but he's at Wright-Patterson now. I got this close to the military when I moved to St. Louis in 88. I was actually a trash man at Scott Air Force Base. Don't laugh. It was a good job and a good paycheck. Worst job in the world. But I know that military folks are very mobile. They've got to drop and go anytime they need to. What happens if you get deployed or get stationed somewhere else? Do you get the U-Haul or do you have a place to store it?
So that's a great question. I suppose it would depend if I'm doing a permanent change of station, something that would be kind of long-term or a quick TDY. For short, durations, I'd likely just leave the stuff here at the dorm because I would still have the dorm when I come back. However, if I do a change of station, that's a good question. And definitely something I thought of a few times. The good thing with me being only about, 4.5 hours away from St. Louis is I'd likely take most of it just back down to St. Louis prior to me leaving. If I got a box up in a U-Haul, I'll make it work. I got a few friends on base that'd be more than happy.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it is a good point because you've got a lot of it and you got to figure out what to do with it. So what are you hoping to do in the military? You want to make a career out of this? Because I'm thinking you're stationed right there at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. I grew up just south of Dayton, Ohio. I know the Air Force Base well. I've been to the museum there before, which is pretty fantastic. And I imagine Absolutely. You enjoy that aspect of it too, huh?
Yes, it's actually funny you bring up the museum. When I was initially making my, you know, choice selection for my, is what they call your dream sheet of your preferred bases you'd like to go to in boot camp, I actually had Wright-Patterson as my number one purely based off of the fact that they had the museum here. But to your point, as far as career-wise goes, yes, I would love to make the Air Force my career. I plan on at least doing 20 years here, seeing where that takes me. I mean, you know, the wonderful thing about the military is there's always so many different avenues you can take, different career sure. fields you can try out. If you don't care for one, you can always branch to a different one. So it's quite a good position to be in, and I've enjoyed every minute of it so far, and I am definitely excited to continue that avenue.
Are you a frequent flyer at the Soldiers Memorial Military Museum?
In St. Louis? Absolutely. I've been there a variety of times and actually have gotten quite a few photographs in front of it in uniform.
Is there any chance that you could see being a historian within the military? I mean, military's got a lot of avenues to go down. I had an uncle and an aunt that were in the Air Force band, and they did it for years. You could actually be paid to do what you're doing.
Yes, actually, it's great that you bring that up. I know at one point, I'm not sure, it may still be today, the Air Force actually had an AFSC, a job specialty dedicated to historian. And it's one you'd have to apply through after you have a few years in the military itself. But that would be a fantastic position. And I've actually become friends with some of the different historians here on base as well. They've offered a wealth of information and it'll help kind of guide me in the right direction with some of the different avenues for resources and different databases to kind of get in touch with more Air Force history. But if that is something I can do in the future, I would absolutely love it. But, you know, it's also just a great side hobby as well.
Airman First Class William Heimberger with us this morning. And, you know, I in addition to collecting antique radios, I've collected older weapons and things like that. When I go to, have you been to the World War One Museum here in downtown St. Louis?
The World War One Museum?
That's what it is, right across the street here.
Soldiers
right?
Memorial.
Soldiers Memorial Museum.
Oh, absolutely. Downtown. Yes, I have been there a few times. Yes.
And they've revamped that, but you walk through there, and I mean, I'm always mesmerized by the weapons. I would imagine you would find yourself equally mesmerized by the uniforms and some of the original stuff that they've got in these museums. So what's on your list? You must keep a list of things that you're still seeking, right?
Absolutely. You know, on that list, it ranges from, you know, things I know I can afford currently to some dream projects. But as far as in the foreseeable future, some of the items I'm looking for right now are some of the more, I guess you consider, rare Air Force uniforms from the 1950s to 60s. The Air Force actually issued a white summer uniform. They don't use it anymore, and it's definitely a harder one to come by. So that's something I've had on my radar for a while. But, you know, if I were to get a little more egregious with it, and if I had, you know, all the money in the world, one thing I'd love to get is a post-war Willys Jeep that's done up in the Air Force fashion with the Air Force blue and stenciling.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, my mom tells me she learned to drive on a Willys Jeep years ago.
No so, way.
Yeah, it's pretty good, funny that you mentioned that. Yeah, we've all got our wish list. If you're a collector of anything, you've got your list of things that you wish you could come up with one of these days, right?
Well, absolutely. And this article just came out March 6th, so just a couple of weeks ago. Just a few weeks ago. Have you had people reach out and say, man, I've got to send you something? And in addition to that, like a White House press briefing, I have a second question. What is the last artifact that you have added to your collection?
Absolutely. So to answer the first question, as far as individuals reaching out, I haven't had anyone, actually, no, I take that back. I've had two airmen come up to me or other service members, either former or active, said that they had a few items to see if I was interested in, and obviously I'm always happy to take in any items. Some of the items I've been given are the old uniform shirts from the Vietnam era, as well as a Notice All Airmen handbook from the 1940s. So there are some airmen out there that are happy to kind of, you know, pass on their items to me, and it's certainly a privilege and an honor because I think that's, you know, one of the best ways to keep the history going. And then To answer your second question, as far as what is the most recent item I've gotten, and that would actually be a post-World War II, early Korean War air police helmet. So this was back before the security forces that we know today of the Air Force existed, and back then they were actually called the Air Police. So it's a M1 helmet liner that's painted Air Force blue with a white stripe to signify law enforcement.
That's pretty impressive. Awesome. I have to tell you, Airman, I've got a friend here in St. Louis who now runs the Soda Museum over in downtown St. Charles. And it's unbelievable, the collection of like Coke cans and Coke memorabilia that he's got in this place. And I asked him how he got started. He's been collecting this stuff since he was a kid. So now I would imagine at age 25, I'm kind of extrapolating out here, but 20, 30 years down the road, we're going to see the William Heimberger Museum somewhere with all these uniforms you've collected, right?
That would be the dream. I mean, honestly, I think at this point I need to get a hangar of my own and just have it all, dedicated to a museum.
Yeah, that'd be great. Like in Maverick, that hangar, he lives in a Quonset hut hangar. You could get one of those, and that'd be fantastic.
Exactly. And if Tom Cruise wants to give me his P-51, I'll happily take that as well.
And hey, don't forget your relic that you might be able to get in 30 or 40, 50 years is the F-47.
Oh, yeah. How about
plane that they just created. How about that to the collection? You know, on a serious note, Airman.
Fantastic.
Yeah, no kidding.
On a serious note, my father, who's 81 years old, still devoted to this country as a great patriot and a military life. I will tell you, one of the most moving things that he's recently done was, and he's very mobile, he takes care of people and goes around. He went to a retirement home and found a gentleman who had lost both his legs and went and got him a military uniform shirt, had his name badge put on it, and presented it to him. Dude, it was amazing. It was, and I've got video of it. Yeah, so don't forget about the older crew when you're nearby a nursing home to pop in on any day, not just Veterans Day, and maybe show them a couple of things.
Absolutely. Actually, it's funny you bring that up. So when I was in high school, I actually volunteered at the Cardinal Ritter Senior Home out in Shrewsbury. And what I actually would do is I would talk with, at the time, the World War II veterans. And for three in particular, I actually, similar to what you did, one was a Navy veteran. And he always talked about how he had his Navy blanket that he loved so much. And, it was a heavy wool issued one. So what I ended up doing is I found one, tracked it down, bought it, and I ended up presenting it to him. And then one of the other service members who served in the Army, he didn't have any of his, uniform items or military items from his service. So I actually went out and bought, his insignia, put on a shirt just like you did, presented that to him. And the other veteran, he was in the 741st Tank Battalion, First Lieutenant Tom Brooks. And I presented him a model of a Sherman tank and gave it to him as well. So I agree with you on that. It is amazing to kind of pay it back to the, our fellow brothers and sisters in arms. And, kind of giving them and sharing the history that they experienced.
Well said. Airman First Class William Heimberger, thank you for sharing a little bit about your collection with us, and we look forward to seeing how much it grows over the years.
And how much are tickets to get into your dorm?
Currently, admission is free.
That's great.
Hey, to all the ladies.
Thank you for your service to our country. We appreciate it.
And sorry, obviously not military. Thank you for having me on air.
Absolutely. We will hopefully talk again sometime in the future. Airman First Class, William Heimberger there out of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. So, and born right here in St. Louis.
DeBerg,
isn't that a great
school?
Story?
So impressive.
Yeah. I love that. I ran out of room in my house for my collection. Well, they're of varying sizes. I've got a couple of the full size cabinets, and then I've got, of course, smaller desktop models. And at some point, my wife said, as I brought one home and carried it down the stairs, "We've run out of room." I'm like, I think you're probably right. We probably have a run out of room. Hopefully, one of these days, goals. When I build out my basement, my basement's unfinished now, and I put my bar down there, my bourbon bar, I'm going to be able to display some of my nicer antique radios around that. So
I got to be honest with you, Mark. I'm so impressed with anybody passionate about something. You're passionate about old antique radios and collecting those. Carl, Star Trek or Wars or whatever.
I'm just kidding. I'm wearing Star Wars. Star Wars socks right
yes,
now.
Yes, he is.
I know. By the way, I had a question for you, Carl. Can we just do this real quick?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
What is Princess Leia's whole name?
Princess Leia Organa Solo.
No, pole name. Pole. I'm kidding. Oh. Okay. I knew you would know that question.
Jabba the Hutt's prisoner. That's her pole.
Yeah, yeah. That's I guess so. That's probably it. All right.
Okay, we're going off the rails now. Wrap it up.
And on that note, that does it for this edition of Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.